and thank you so much for listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. And thanks to you, Spotify has said in its Spotify Wrapped stats at the end of the year that this podcast is in the top 10 of most watched podcasts on Spotify and is in the top 15% of the most followed podcast. Who knew? But thank you so much for making it such a success. And be sure to rate the podcast in your podcast player so the algorithms can do their thing and promote it to other people that may find it useful. So, on this show, we're going to be diving into the world of analytics. And from what I'm seeing in the ecosystem at the moment, the honeymoon period of Salesforce implementation is kind of over. There are a lot less greenfield projects and brand new Salesforce projects, and the existing Salesforce orgs are just getting more complex and are collecting more data than ever before. But for me, it's understanding the data on how users are using Salesforce, as well as the customers interacting with the business and seeing how the business is performing and where bottlenecks and things are happening based on the data we're seeing. And so this, for me, is kind of a really important subject. So I have Zach Bowders and Sarah Bartlett on the podcast today. Now, Zach is a Tableau visionary and Tableau ambassador and is a business intelligence specialist working deep in the Tableau world. And Sarah, who is also a Tableau visionary and ambassador, which is a bit like a Salesforce MVP, works in the UK as a Tableau consultant for Red Hat. So my name is Francis Pinder, and you are watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast, where I speak to Salesforce industry influencers so we can gain a better understanding of how to excel in a career path from a Salesforce admin or developer to an architect. So if you want to learn more about the Tableau ecosystem, understanding the importance of storytelling in analytics, and the fantastic easy way to get public databases of data and biz challenges so you can publicize your expertise in analytics, or even just wanting to learn more about Tableau and where to start, then I think you're going to get an awful lot out of this conversation with Zach and Sarah. It is incredibly interesting. So without further ado, let's go. So welcome, Zach Bowers. Yes, is that right?
Bowders.
Oh, Bowders, sorry. I've been trying, practicing lots.
No.
Oh, anyway, and Sarah Bartlett, which I got that right.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Welcome to the show. So this show is all about Tableau, hopefully. And you are two people that are kind of in the Tableau community, kicking it, rocking it, whatever you want to call it. And this podcast is generally a lot of people in the Salesforce community that haven't really heard about Tableau. Well, know about it, but don't really know it in a lot of detail. And yeah, so I kind of really wanted to pick your brains on this one to learn a bit more about the Tableau ecosystem, the community, how to find out more about Tableau, and also what Tableau is. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Sounds great.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, I thought just to start off is how you guys kind of got into the Tableau world and what Tableau is for those people who don't know anything about Tableau.
Yeah, so I can go first. I'll go first. So I was working as an analyst. This is probably back in maybe 2014. I was working as an analyst for a facilities management company. Did loads of dashboards in Excel. I thought Excel was like the dream. And then I got introduced to Tableau we had a new boss come in. They said that, you know, Tableau is a great tool for data visualization and you should really learn it. I got sent on a course. I went into that not knowing what Tableau was, and did that for 2 days and came out and my mind was just blown. I was like, wow, Tableau is incredible. It's so much better than Excel. It allows me to do all these things. The big thing for me was around mapping at the time.
So, right.
the company I was working
for. Mapping data onto maps.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
So
I was working. I was working partly for Vodafone, and we wanted to map where all of their Vodafone stores were around the country. And I realized you could actually do that in Tableau with a couple of clicks. And obviously, that's not something that we could do in Excel very easily. Probably can if you try hard enough. But so that's how I was introduced to Tableau. But then it was just me on my own in that role. I was the only analyst. So it took me a while to kind of get started. I didn't really know about the Tableau community initially. So I probably fumbled my way through for about a year. And then it was only through joining Twitter and then getting involved in the Tableau conference in London at the time that I actually discovered there was a whole community around this thing. And nothing like what it looks like now. Back then it was much smaller, but there was still a thriving community, and I managed to find lots of things out there to help me, and started getting involved in community projects just to build my skills. And through that, I met people, went to more conferences. I guess the rest is history, but that's kind of like where my journey began.
Cool. And Zach, how did you get into Tableau? How long have you been in it? It's been a while.
It's been since 2016. So right, I found some pictures I took of the first Tableau training I went to in New York. So I recently had the opportunity to go visit the data school in New York, which is one of the big Tableau training and consultancies. And I called it the Return of the Zach Tour, because literally their office is about like two blocks from where I was originally trained. So I got the opportunity to go see them and speak at the New York tug at the Salesforce Tower in New York. But for me, it was my work sent me to a 2-day training in New York. And originally I was like, wow, this is so much easier than Business Objects, which is what I was using at work at the time, which always required me to do extensive custom SQL just to make like tabular charts. So like Excel style views. And very quickly in Tableau, you're able to make all sorts of charts. And I was like, this is great. I'm never actually going to get to use this at work. I'm just going to keep using that. And then I started using it recreationally on the side. So I started making my own exploratory visits about topics I liked, like movies. And this is before I realized there was any sort of community or anything. And not too long after that, I discovered folks like Sarah, who was one of the first people I met sort of in the Tableau Data Fam community and stuff. And I realized, wow, there's this huge network of like really passionate people out here doing projects for fun. And it really helps their, you know, their other work. So it's, you might be making a project that doesn't look like the network diagram behind me doesn't look like anything that you would see at work, but I learn stuff through it that I can then take back to my job, and it makes me better.
Yeah. And it's like, I've noticed that there's like this whole kind of community of people just mashing data together and creating vizzes on all kinds of different things.
Yeah. I mean, you name it, anything goes, especially for Zach.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like way out there. I love it. Like, you can just do anything. And if that's what floats your boat, then cool. Like,
yeah.
I started growing more when I stopped doing conventional topics. So we've got many community exercises like Makeover Monday or Workout Wednesday, which are these community-based initiatives where there's like a public data set and people are able to go work on it and develop different skills. And I was doing that a lot in the beginning, and that helped me sort of take off quickly. But then I quickly realized like I'm not getting the sort of personal growth I want. I'm not really making stuff that excites me, and that's the kind of stuff that'll keep me going in this. So I started getting into my oddball topics like movies and comic books and hot dog eating contests and just, you know, strange things. And the more I did that stuff, the more fun I was having and the more I wanted to keep doing it.
So what kind of stuff did you do? Like, how did you mash, like in movies or hot dogs?
Okay, so for hot dogs, I recently looked into the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which happens every year at Coney Island in New York, which is famous for folks like Joey Chestnut or Kobayashi. You know, it's... And this hot dog eating contest, which they say is 100 years old, but really started in the 70s, involves you have to eat as many hot dogs and buns as possible within an allotted time limit. And Kobayashi kind of broke this game for them. So he came in and said, well, rather than trying to eat hot dogs faster, what if I came up with techniques to make hot dogs easier to eat? So he would break the hot dog in half and eat both of the meat portions at once and then dip the bread in water and slurp it down. It's horrifying. Like, you don't want to watch it. Like, it's not fun. But he immediately started breaking all these records. And then not long after that, Joey Chestnut came and knocked him out, and he's doing it even better. And I was like, this is really interesting. I mean, it's bizarre. Like, it's grotesque. But I started thinking about, like, who really is the best at this? And I realized they kept changing the time limits of the game. So many of these metrics that they were using to say this person is the greatest ever, well, that's the total count of hot dogs. That's not hot dogs per minute, which is the real question. So I started looking at, are these numbers still valid once we consider this contest was at points 2 minutes long and 14 minutes long? So, you know, getting into weird stuff like that, I'm heavily inspired by Freakonomics, just investigating the weird side of strange things.
Cool. Yeah, because I've always had that kind of, I suppose, data bent on love, you know, liking data and stuff like that, but I've never really kind of maximized it, I suppose. Yeah, creating reports and charts in dashboards in Salesforce, but it can be quite, you know, it's limiting to a point, I suppose, until you need to kind of start using Tableau or CRM Analytics / Tableau Analytics / Wave Analytics / whatever it used to be called, God knows. That's a whole different story, I suppose. But yeah, and I've always, for the last couple of years, maybe I should do it. Maybe I should actually get and do it. And that was like councils have all the, and maybe somebody's already done it, but they kind of report on all the companies they spend money with, right, around the UK. And I was kind of like, I wonder what council in the UK spends the most money in its local area. Like they spend more money in their own council versus outside and where that ranks, right? And it's just pooling all that data together, mashing it with like companies' house data to find out where the offices are, right? And just work it out. And I've been like, oh, I really want to answer that question, but I've never quite done it. So maybe I should. Bye.
Totally could with Tableau.
You should.
Yeah, and you should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I was getting started, so is there a, like, because Salesforce, you've got the free kind of startup, you know, you can kind of get a dev org, which is kind of limited in size, limited in users, and you can kind of start playing around. Does Tableau have an equivalent to that?
Yeah, so we have Tableau Public. So Tableau Public is free. You can go on there and use an online version. It's essentially exactly what you'd have at work. It's all in the browser. You can go in there, connect up your data, and off you go. And then when you're ready to publish, you'd publish up to your Tableau Public profile. So that's where like Zach and I and all the other community members will share their work. So you can go to our profile and see all the weird visits that we've done over the years. But it's like Tableau Public's incredible. Like it's if you're looking for inspiration, or maybe you want to check if anyone's done that viz that you described, there's literally millions of vizes up there. So you can go there, find inspiration, look at what other people have done, even download those vizes and understand how they built them. So when Zach does his wacky network charts or whatever, you could actually download them and kind of reverse engineer and get to the bottom, you know, start to learn how he built them. So then you can take those techniques forward. So it's, couldn't recommend it high enough. It's great.
Cool. So
it's great because being open like that, it allows anyone to reverse engineer anyone else's work. So I know some people would have the fear, like, I'm putting my work out here. What's to stop someone from downloading it and just re-uploading and saying it's theirs? And that's definitely a possibility, right? Like I created a couple John Wick quizzes a few years ago.
Just clone your profile, Zach. Give me 1 minute.
Right. Like get in there. And like, I'll go on and a lot of people have copied these and I'm not really concerned because it's less about the fact that you have this on your profile, but I'm learning these skills and I can use them at work and, you know, people can see the progression I have made. Like if you go back and look at my early stuff, a lot of it's stuff I'm really not super proud of, but I keep it up there both for myself so I can go back and say, hey, look at all the stuff I learned since then and my improvement. Because so many times I'll compare myself to others and I'm like, this person's doing amazing things. Like I wish I could do that. And I'm not comparing against myself. And when I realize sort of the journey I've been on, like personally and professionally, I can really see the change and how much better I get all the time. And that's the wonder of that, being able to have that public, you know, body of work.
Yeah, because actually I was listening to one of your podcasts actually on your, because you're a podcast as well. Was it Data Love? Is that right? Yeah.
Or Love. Yeah. Data Plus Love. Yeah.
Data
that's
Plus
me.
Love. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it was quite, yeah. And you're saying that actually being able to go back in history and see how you've grown over time, looking at your profile is quite interesting to watch. And like, and I suppose it is. It's like the code I've written 10 years ago in Salesforce, I just don't want to look at it. It's probably horrific. It's probably still running. And actually, somebody did come up to me at a Salesforce event saying, oh, I saw your name in our code. And I'm like, oh, my word. What company are you? And you're like, oh, my word, that was a long, long time ago. Is it still working? Why were you in there? Were you fixing it? I don't know. Yeah, yeah, it's weird putting it all on show, isn't it? Which is, we don't get, yeah.
We have the same thing. So we always recommend that you keep your old stuff there. Just like Zach said, you can show that progression. And so if you go to any of our profiles, you'll see our new flashy, shiny stuff at the top, and you'll probably be like, oh, I can never do that. Just scroll down, like you're scrolling down, like all the way to the bottom, and you'll see some utter rubbish. Like my second biz was worse than my first, but it's still there. And you can go and have a look at it and laugh your head off at like how bad it is.
Brilliant. So there's one way of copying, right? So is there but actually learning how to do Tableau. Is there free learning? I know nothing about Tableau. Honestly, I'm a Tableau newbie, I suppose.
Sarah's got this.
I was going to say, Zach, you can take this. But yeah, so there's some learning videos on Tableau. Like if you go to tableau.com, you'll quickly find them there. They'll get you up and running. But I would say like the number one way of learning is through the community, right? It's there's so much information out there through blogs, YouTube videos, like podcasts, and all the visits that you have on Tableau Public as well. You name it, there's literally so much information. We've also got the forums as well, where you can go and ask questions. I think you've got something similar in the Salesforce world, but it's like a go and ask a question, someone answers from the community. And there's people like someone like Tableau Tim. So if Tableau Tim's on YouTube, he's got a ton of videos on like everything you could possibly imagine. It's a great way to get started. And then the projects we're talking about, like the community projects, they complement that learning. So they give you the opportunity to maybe try out new things, or intentionally will have something that you can like a technique you can try out, or maybe there's a new feature that's just come in. They'll have for like Work at Wednesday, for instance, they'll have challenges tailored to that new feature, so you can actually go and practice it, and there'll be a like a solution workbook you can check your result against as well, and that's all free.
One of the best getting started resources was started by a Tableau community member when she was in college, so it's called the Tableau Student Guide, and it's not just for students. She was a Tableau student ambassador. So as a student, she caught Tableau's attention, like, hey, you're doing interesting stuff. Maria Brock started it, and it's now run by Eric Baelish. And it's one of the best places where if you download Tableau Public and you're getting started and you're like, wow, there's a lot here, I don't know where to start. It's one of the most amazing tools for getting started, because it really teaches you the fundamentals of what you need to use in the tool, but in a very like user-friendly and non-super technical way. So it guides you through like connecting to data, making basic visuals, and then beyond that, this is how you do the next thing and the next thing, and then points you to other resources. Like once you've sort of made it to that point, it's kind of gently pushing you out of the nest and saying, now here's all the other things you can engage with. And Sarah herself has started community exercises in the past. She has Iron Quest, which is amazing.
Yeah, so thanks for the plug, Zach. So have you heard of IronViz? Does that ring any bells? No. So IronViz, I think, is the world's biggest data visualization competition. That's what Tableau like to say. I believe it is. It's an annual competition. It's the final is performed at Tableau Conference. You have three finalists on the stage. They're each given a data set and they have to build a visualization in 20 minutes. Now, they do get some prep time, so they probably have a couple of weeks in advance to put something together, but because there's no way that you could do that in 20 minutes and put on a good show. But in preparation for that, there's a big feeder contest. So that's where Tableau will say, either here's a data set or go away and visualize a topic. So it could be, I think the most recent one, Zach, remind me what it was.
Oh gosh, it was games.
Yeah, so any games, sports, board games, video games, you name it, you could just build a visualization using any data set on games. And then they pick the three finalists from that, who then proceed to the final. So for this year, we'll be doing it in Vegas in May at the conference. But I built a project based on my experience. So I was a finalist in the European IronViz competition back in 2018. And through that experience, I heard a lot of people saying like, oh, you know, I can never do this. What's the point of me entering if I'm not going to end up in the final? Like all this, you know, like negative talk. I was like, we need to do something about this. We need to give away a platform for people to practice. So even if they never enter, just practice like building these kind of vizzes. Now, these vizzes for IronViz are scored on design, storytelling, and analysis. And that applies to the feeder contest as well as the final. So it's very similar kind of like criteria. So I built a project on it. So it's called Iron Quest. It runs pretty much every month. And we pick a completely random topic each month to visualize. So like the most recent one was Weird or Wonderful. So you decide what that means to you, and you go away and find a data set that meets that theme. But it's super fun. So that's typically how IronViz runs. And so a lot of people enter and they have no intention of entering IronViz ever, but it's just a way to have those prompts and build something that meets the criteria.
Cool. So, yeah. That's really cool. So you mentioned story, creating a story, right?
Storytelling.
How is that important to creating visualizations?
It's incredibly important. So so typically you want your dashboard or whatever it is you're building to really have a good flow to it. So it has a natural, like your user will progress through. They will then, you know, you want to draw their attention to certain things to like bring that information, that story to life. And that's where we use things like color, perhaps, or we call them pre-attentive attributes. This is like a technical term, but you really want to drive your user through and have a natural progression through the viz to some kind of conclusion or action that they need to take. So that will look different depending on if you're doing it at work or for fun. That's typically what storytelling is.
Cool. Because it's interesting, because like in the Salesforce world, because for my students, I'm like teaching them storytelling is so important, right? On architecting solutions, designing and everything else. But then when it comes to like reports and dashboards, it's like, you want to know about your pipeline. Okay, here's a pipeline chart. You know, it's not really telling much of a story. And actually, in the last release, which I, in the core Salesforce, which I think is fab, you can now finally put images on your dashboards. Like you could never do that before, you know, and actually put text blocks on to actually describe or have a title or have something around your images, which I think is going to make it, well, the core platform analytics anyway, a little kind of more easier to kind of tell a story, I suppose, and make it kind of more graphically interesting.
I think one of the interesting things about using a tool like Tableau is it's sort of a two-part thing. So we're talking about storytelling. And there's one part that's sort of understanding how to use the tool. And the other part is understanding what you should be making with the tool. Because I've seen many people that are really proficient with using the tool, but then the stuff they make doesn't necessarily bring the clarity, or, you know, we use the term storytelling. I've been triggered by this term sometimes because it can be thrown around and used sort of in poor or inelegant ways maybe. But what we're really saying with storytelling is what's the message of what you're putting out here? Because you don't want to just create dashboards that say, like we're talking in terms of business context here, I've built a thing. Now you figure out what it means. You know, it's you want to build something that actually cuts through to some kind of insight versus just making something where people have to go hunt for meaning within it. You're not setting your users out on a quest. You're supposed to be like presenting them something so they don't have to go on the quest. That the quest is to find deeper meaning to that and not to understand if it means anything in the first place.
Yeah. So how do you balance that? Because the business being able to kind of flexibly change the data sets and visualizations to answer the questions that they have to see where there's potentials for, business development opportunities, I suppose, versus being very prescriptive on the story you're telling and then the answers that you want to give. Is that a thing?
Yeah, so I'd say, I mean, you do that upfront work to really get to the crux of what it is your users need. Not necessarily what they're asking for, because what they're asking for and what they need may be two completely different things, right? They might say, I need a table. And you'll be like, no, you don't, right? So it's getting to the bottom of that. And then you could design something that's interactive. So you would typically build in interactivity. So you might be like showing your insights on a high level initially and give them the opportunity to interact and dive in and dig deeper and find out what's important to them and dig into that and find the insights relevant to exactly what it is they're looking for. So that's typically how I would approach that, at least. So,
okay, cool. Yeah. So with the way the world is at the moment, we're getting, you know, ChatGPT, I can forget the acronym, but yeah, AI and everything kind of pouring in and data becoming more and more important for organizations. So where do you see like the future of Tableau and kind of data analysis and data science going, do you think, over the next couple of years?
I think Zach's got this one.
If I knew that, I would be I'd be worth a lot more money than I actually am. But I think realistically, tools like ChatGPT, I've been experimenting with it. It's interesting. I successfully got it to kill 6 astronauts the other day. So that's something. So chat is, any AI is manipulatable. Like essentially we're now creating computers where we can hack them with common language text. So now it's becoming an exercise of, can you talk this thing into a situation that it wasn't supposed to do, which you can, and it's not very hard. But there's a lot of fear about AI like ChatGPT replacing jobs and analytics and that sort of thing. And there's a possibility that I think there might be a reactionary move and it might initially replace some jobs. But I think realistically, tools like this are going to work with humans and it's going to be a partnership. It's going to be another tool where we're able to use this. And then the human is sort of the filter that does reality checks to make sure, does this actually make sense? Does this deliver value? You'll see AIs out there like, I think, DALL-E or whatever, that people say, make me a business dashboard about this. And many of the dashboards look gorgeous. Like visually, you look at them and they're stunningly appealing. But then you look at it, it's like, this is for a shipping company. Why is there a large cargo ship taking up 75% of this page? Like they know what business they're in. Like that's not delivering context or value. So, you know, having the person come in and say, the picture's great, let's ditch that.
Yeah, I know the exact viz that you're talking about, Zach. I've seen it. It's the kind of thing you put in a frame in your living room, right?
It's beautiful. It means
that's
nothing.
I like when I've been playing with it, it's like, yeah, it can create the code. The code runs, but would I ever put it into production? No way. It would never scale. It will break after like, you know, half a day of use, you know, kind of thing. And I think, and this is it. And also I think, yay, it's the thing at the moment, but it's going to take time to kind of bed in and figure out where its use cases are going to be, I think, as well. So yeah, it can get rid of those, you know, potentially small jobs or whatever that is. But I think even that is going to take a little while to figure out where the value lies, I suppose. But also I think it's a bit of a, I don't know, is there a shift going to happen where actually, like you said, you know, it killed 5 people based on, or 5 astronauts based on what you asked it. Are we now going down this road that at the moment, you know, IT is very unregulated, and actually now the realization that technology does have the capability potentially to go Terminator on us? I don't know, you know, we're talking, you know, but actually, is this going to mean that us as developers, admins, data architects, data scientists are going to be liable for the things that we're creating, kind of thing, and the results that come out of it? I don't know.
I think that depends on how lawsuits around self-driving cars shake out, because like it or not, we've already given AI dominion over life and death. And that's when your self-driving cars decides whether to preserve you or sacrifice the people in a different car to protect its own passengers. Like, you know, to the car, it might be a dispassionate choice. Its programming is, you know, first protect my passengers, second protect other people. But at that point, there's a hierarchy, and we have now assigned something with no ornate morality of any kind. It's basically a decision tree, dominion over human life or death, which are choices humans make every day. Every time we get in a car, every time we look at a package of meat and wonder if it's still good, you know, we're making choices that affect like real people's lives. And to some degree, whether we're ready or not, we have to get used to the idea that something else now has that power also.
Because I heard that even in California at the moment, you know, these self-driving cars, you got the taxis that are self-driving that you can kind of pick up, and they're kind of, there'll be a fire and the fire department's out hosing down a building, and these cars are trying to get down the road with all the hoses, and the firemen are like breaking the glass of these cars to try and stop them from running over their pipes, because they don't know any better. They're just trying to edge down the street. You know, it looks clear to me. You know, it's quite an interesting world. This is the big pause where we go, what next?
I will say this, you know, to break up the tension. There's a Twitter account I love called the Pessimists Archive. And the Pessimists Archive covers like moral panics throughout history. So it's all the headlines like books are making young women reject men, you know, stuff like that. So it's a radio is making our children communists, or video games will make your child a murderer. And it's like all the different things over history where we've sort of had freakouts and major concerns, like this thing is going to be the end of the world. And Dan Carlin does a podcast called Hardcore History, and he wrote a book called The World Is Always Ending about all the times like the world could have been over and it wasn't, and so many times we never thought about. And I'm not worried of a Terminator-style scenario. I think the world is much more resilient. I remain optimistic for the future, and I think there will be hiccups along the way. There will be stuff that freaks us out, but I think that's true of any sort of new technology idea.
And I think, if you even go back, like when electricity and stuff was kind of born, it was like, okay, there was a whole period of time of not figuring out how it's going to use it. It's going to destroy the world or whatever. But it's this whole figuring it out. This is why I think it's going to take a little time to kind of figure out where it fits and how, you know, what use cases are, and then it's going to benefit, you know, and just be ubiquitous to what we're doing, you know, and it's become part and parcel of exactly what we do, like driving a car every day. It's just natural now, whereas back then it was like, oh my god, these big beasts on cars could, you know, machines that could run over everybody, you know, we need somebody at the front waving a red flag just in case, you know.
And what are cars going to do to the saddle business?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we've got all these people in saddles and horseshoes.
It's going to destroy
It's going to devastate these industries. What do? It's like, unfortunately, technology is inherently destructive, and there's going to be stuff that gets destroyed. But the good thing is there will be other things, but it's that intermediate period that's terrifying.
And I think they always said that, like, was it the Second World War and war, you know, are the biggest maturity of technology happens then, when, you know, everybody's trying to kind of build on technology to kind of fight a war or whatever. So, which is always a bit scary as well, but, you know. Okay. What else were we going to talk about? I can't even remember.
I want to talk more about getting people interested in Tableau. So if you are unfamiliar with this, which you probably are, because I know Salesforce and Tableau, same parent company, not the biggest crossover in terms of Venn diagram, right? We're both communities of like passionate tech people.
CRM analytics.
Where data is sort of our key ingredient.
It isn't CRM analytics that, isn't it? It's the glue between the two, right?
Right. It's just like one of us is making Italian food and one of us is making Mexican food, and we don't recognize that. It's like, we're all cooking here. Like, let's come on.
Where would you start? You mentioned a load of blogs for a start and resources. And what are your kind of top resources, would you say, as a go-to resources?
So Tableau Student Guide is obviously like rock bottom getting started. Going to Tableau Public in the first place, like Sarah suggested, not only that's where you can get the tool, but that's where you can see the Viz Gallery, which is all the stuff people are putting out. And if you want to sort of get excited, like one of the best things I would say you could do is go to the Viz Gallery. They've got a selection called Viz of the Day, which is sort of selected by community members in Tableau of like, this is an interesting thing that happened, you know, someone made, and we're highlighting it today. Sometimes it's because the topic is sort of on topic or like current. Sometimes it's because it's a really interesting technique, or sometimes it's just really, really cool looking.
I'm looking at it right now.
That's one of those things.
Vikings, the invasion of Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. It's just
there you
like,
go. So, that's really and then cool. tomorrow it will be, I don't know, like some kind of charity. Raising money, but I would say subscribe to it. You can get it into your inbox Monday to Friday. It is a great way just of seeing what people are doing and get some inspiration.
And once you download Tableau Public, if you're interested in learning, I can't give you better advice than to start doing this in public. You know, whatever you're making, you know, you should share it on whatever social media platform you prefer, like LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever you are. I'll tell you, the biggest interactions I get with sort of other Tableau users, which we colloquially call the data fam, is on Twitter. If that's not your cup of tea, that's okay. There's people on LinkedIn and other places as well. That's just where I sort of get the sort of most enthusiastic responses. And honestly, the DataFam Twitter is really positive. So like, don't feel like you're gonna put your stuff out there and people are just gonna be taking like pot shots. That's yeah. Reddit. Like, if you put it on Reddit, if you put it on Data's Beautiful on Reddit,
yeah, don't do that.
You will get heat from like people that I had someone hunt me down. Like, he didn't know how to reach me. He found me on a different social media platform just to like give me like intense criticism. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Like, it's weird, isn't it? The different social networks that have just kind of get different people there. But yeah.
But yeah, there's very few bad apples in the Tableau like community. Like, and if there are any, we quickly like hunt them down. Right. But I would say share your work publicly, like Zach said, whatever platform you want to do that on. If Reddit's your thing, then good luck to you. But if you're doing it on something like Twitter or LinkedIn, I'd say ask for feedback, right? So you put your viz out there, you can share a link to that viz and an image of it. And then just, you know, ask for feedback, you know, maybe say it's your first viz and it's the first time doing this, and people will help you. And I think that's where Zach and I started, right? We started building these vizes. We both started, I think, Zach, with Make Up a Monday, right? Which is a weekly project where every week they find a visualization that's on the internet somewhere. It's perhaps not the best visualization, and then they share the underlying data behind it, and you're tasked with then building something that's better. And it's great because you've got all these people doing it at the same time, so you can see what other people are posting. You search the hashtag and you'll be like, oh yeah, that's actually a really good idea, maybe I can build something similar to that, or you know, take inspiration from that. But yeah, I'd say share your work in public, get that feedback. And that's for me, and probably for you as well, is that was like the number one way I made that progression in my work. Because otherwise you're doing it in a vacuum. You don't know if what you're doing is any good. You know, you're not getting that validation or you know, like pat on the back to say that, you know, you've done good work or recognition.
And it's kind of that you know, it's great kind of just learning the tool, but understanding the best practices. And yeah, you would never use that. You'd use this other function or whatever it may be. You wouldn't get that. I don't in the Salesforce world unless you post it out, right? Publicly.
Yeah. With Makeover Monday, you've got the same tool, you've got the same data. So if someone does something else that you think is impressive or you want to know how they did it, you can download it and you'll be able to understand how they got there. And it's also great because not only are you putting your own work out there and you're sort of, you know, inviting gentle feedback, because that's what everyone's doing. Everyone wants to see each other's stuff. And especially if they know you're new, like no one's out to like get you. Like people really get excited when new people show up, and they would be happy to promote you if anything. But the other great part of it is you're getting to see so many different ideas, and it really helps you mature on that second aspect, which is not the how to use the tool, but like what should I be making with the tool? So the more you see, you may not immediately know what's good and what's not. You might say, that's interesting. Like, I don't know why I think that's good. And obviously there's books and websites and all sorts of things we can suggest to get you on that way. But the more you expose yourself to in sort of seeing visuals, the more you'll start to understand the stuff that works, the stuff that doesn't work. And then you'll start to get to the language of why does this work and why doesn't this work? And that will move along that other part, which is the what to make versus the how to make.
Yeah. And I think for me, for those that are all in Salesforce at the moment, I think this is getting more and more important in the Salesforce world to learn like Tableau and these data tools, because I think we're kind of hitting this kind of maturity of Salesforce where orgs have been around. We're getting all this kind of business processes being built in these orgs. We're kind of getting to the maturity. We're now collecting lots of data, which we now are like, well, we kind of done the broad brush, but we really need to kind of dig down and go, well, how are people interacting with customers and prospects? Where is the value? Where are the kind of mismatches happening? So we can kind of really kind of get that omni-channel experience with a customer really smooth, but also the users within Salesforce, how they're using Salesforce and the platform. So you can't do that with the platform analytics. It's just in the core analytics, you know, you've got to now start really understanding the data, pulling it together and getting kind of visuals and data business kind of
And I think what you learn through doing what Zach and I described is that how to communicate effectively with data. So I think if you're coming at this from a background where you've been coding, you've been doing a lot of stuff that's kind of building the infrastructure, which correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine that's where a lot of Salesforce people are coming at this from. They're like, you know, maybe you're in the more of the back end.
Do this, okay.
Plugging pipes together, making things work. You're not really thinking about how that the end user experience and that you know, how you're going to communicate with this data and get someone to take the action that you want them to take. And I think through doing that public work, you'll learn how to present things on their page effectively. You'll learn techniques that you can apply that will really get people's attention to focus in on certain things and take the desired action, right? And I think that's for me, although I'm quite creative, but I didn't come from an art and design background or anything like that. So initially I found this quite difficult, but over the years, you know, I've just naturally picked it up through that practice and feedback and repetition.
Yeah, interesting. Because I come from an arts background kind of thing, yeah? Theatre and stuff like that. And actually, I worked for a film post-production company at one point, and that really kind of honed my eye, because the people there were like pixel perfect. I remember doing a website, and they were like, that field is one pixel out. And I'm like, what? How can you see that? I'm like zooming in. I literally had to take a screenshot, zoom in. And it's like, yep, he's right. It's one pixel out. It was like insane. And it's like getting that eye of kind of alignment, spacing, as well as communicating story. You know, it is. But you pick it up as you go along, don't you? So
you do. Like that, like, misalignment gives me anxiety. Like, seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, me too. No, why?
Let me throw out another reason why people want to have a public portfolio. And this is, again, if you're wanting to get into Tableau and, you know, develop your skills and also demonstrate that you know this skill, you can't show your work product with anyone. Like, all the stuff all of us are making at work is owned by whoever we're doing it for, right? And it's obviously got proprietary data in it. So it's not like the amazing thing you made at work is transferable. I mean, the skill is, but you can't demonstrate this to someone. You know, if you were having an interview with somebody, you're like, here, let me show you my secret company information. By demonstrating the breadth of your skills and the fact that you know how to do this in a public forum, it's an amazing calling card that in many ways serves as your resume in lieu of a real resume or PV. Like, people can go look and say, okay, I see this person can do stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. Cool. Is that your resume? Do you use it as a resume?
Well, I was going to say, you could actually build a resume in Tableau, right? So, which a lot of people do.
And people do. People do.
So you have that resume, you can pin it at the top, so it's the first visit you see that shows an overview of your career and where you've worked and your skills and that kind of thing. And there's plenty of resources out there if you want to do that. There's a gallery, again, in the Biz Gallery. If you scroll down, there's galleries aligned to different subject areas. So you'll find like business dashboards on, I don't know, food. And then if you keep going down, you'll find one on resumes. So you can get some inspiration. Yeah, but seriously, that it's like Zach said, you could go rock up to a job and be like, oh yeah, I know Salesforce. It's like, prove it. Like, without like, you know, getting someone to do a hands-on test, it's very difficult. But with Tableau, you can say, oh, here's my portfolio. This is the kind of stuff that I do, right?
So, yeah, it's so powerful. That's cool. Loving it. So is there anything else you want to talk about while on the show before I ask my final question?
I think I'm ready.
You ready? Right. Curious. You ready? Shall I ask Zach first? So I ask all my guests this, pretty much, if I remember, usually. And that is, if you could wind back the clock to a point in time and you could give yourself some advice, what point in time would it be and what advice would you give?
Okay, I guess I am going first by default. Which is fine. I'm fine with filibustering. I would wind back to way early in my career. So for context, I finished college and grad school very quickly. I got 2 bachelor's and a master's in 5.5 years and then was immediately unemployed for 6 months. So it totally threw off my propositions I thought I was going to take off. I started at the very, very bottom and spent many years working my way up from there. And if I could go back and tell, unemployed, gained 20 pounds, looking for a job, Zach, early in his career, it would be to bet on myself and to work on skills that I could easily demonstrate. Now, mind you, Tableau did not exist at that point. It would have been something else. But understanding that there aren't really a lot of gatekeepers, really, in real life. We feel like there are. And you can kick down a lot of the perceived barriers that exist between you and a better you by really just embracing the, I think I could do this thing, I'm going to do it. So whether it's doing a podcast or doing public visits on stuff I want to do instead of the public data sets, or, you know, even making friends in different industries, you know, or just reaching out and saying, hey, I'd like to get to know you. Tell me what you do. Anything you want is really on the table if you're willing to sort of go for it and not be afraid that you might fail, because you will sometimes. But sometimes if you're tenacious, you can break through and it's worth it.
And failing is the best learning, I find, anyway. So
yeah, totally.
That's why we do it in public. Like, fail publicly. Yeah. You'll grow like you wouldn't believe.
Exactly. And fail fast, fail publicly. And yeah, it's great. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Sarah, how about you?
So for me, I think it's kind of similar to Zach. So I would wind back to after I'd done that Tableau training course, where, you know, I came out a bit amazed, but not really sure what I was doing with Tableau and not aware of the community. And I would, at that point, you know, not be afraid to like put my work out there and start sharing and learning in public, because I think I messed around for a year. Even after discovering the community, I was aware that something was out there, but I was afraid to get involved because I was afraid of judgment. I thought someone was going to come at me and saying, you're doing this wrong, or like, I don't know, something like that, which was never really going to happen. But I put it off for about a year or more because I was so afraid of thinking, you know, well, maybe I'm not an expert in this, therefore I have nothing to contribute. And that's absolute nonsense in hindsight. So I'd definitely get involved sooner and start, you know, really like sharing my learning sooner. I think everyone has something to share, and there should be nothing stopping you from doing that, because you'll learn so much and meet so many people along the way.
Even if you think you don't, there's something that, yeah, there's lots of people out there looking at the content that won't know, you know, and it's so vast as well. It's, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And even if someone's blogged about this thing before, you're going to share it in your own words and your own perspective. And that blog that you may have found that someone else wrote, likelihood is that person that's going to read yours hasn't read that one, right? So it's, you just, you know, there's always something for you to share and add your own perspective to.
And how I learned Salesforce was publicly as well, actually, pretty much, because there wasn't really a lot of resources out there that when I started, but they had this forum and a couple of workbooks, and that was it. And I would just answer questions on the forum, because I kind of thought, well, if somebody's got that question, I probably will have it as well at some point. And I'd go off, research it, find the answer, and just reply to them. And that's kind of how I learned Salesforce.
Teaching's a great way to learn.
Yeah. Actually, I was out in Copenhagen for the last couple of weeks. And that was one of the traits of highly successful architects, because my talk was on learning, having a learning trait, but actually teaching actually really reinforces it, because you really need to know it if you want to put a blog out there or whatever it is, or a video, and it kind of makes you want to go a little bit deeper, I suppose, in the topic and to get it right. And I think, yeah, and this is why I kind of do these, you know, training and blogs and stuff like that, to kind of pick everybody's brains, learn more, and kind of everybody, you know, can learn from it, hopefully. Maybe, I don't know.
Occasionally I'll challenge myself, so I'll sign up to do a talk maybe in a couple of weeks from that point on something I don't even know yet, and I'll have to then force myself to learn it and be able to communicate that, because that's even harder, like, because I think that really tests, yeah, do you actually understand it, or do you think you understand it? But that's a great challenge and way to like push yourself, I think.
Yeah, definitely, if you've got, yeah, the guts to do it. But yeah,
I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Like, you mess it up. So what?
Like, well, exactly. Yeah. And actually, I tell people, like, you know, even if if you're not great at public speaking, you know, reach out to your local community group and do a 5-minute pitch or feature or something like that, just to get used to standing up in front and just talk about a Tableau feature or something like that, the community group. Yeah. They always want content anyway. And also, it's a great way of, you know, if it's 5 minutes and a complete disaster, doesn't matter, it's 5 minutes, you know. Yeah. And everybody's so, yeah, welcoming and helpful anyway, you know. It's a great way to start those softer presentation skills and improving those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I run the London Tableau user group, and we've done that in the past. We've done a whole session of lightning talks, so it's a 10-minute talks on whatever you want Tableau related, right? And that's a really great way of getting new people to get up and speak, so yeah, I recommend that.
How do they contact you if they want to do that? Or actually, generally, if they want to, if any advice or anything else, or if anybody does want to reach out to you guys, which is the best network/way of contacting you guys?
Yes, so you could find me on Twitter. So I'm Sarah Loves Data. I have a blog at sarahlovesdata.co.uk. Pretty much Sarah Loves Data anywhere you will find me. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, where I actually go by my real name, Sarah Bartlett. Zach, over to you.
I am Zach Bowders on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. If you follow me, you probably won't get much from me there. I also have the Data Plus Love podcast and my Tableau public profile.
Yeah, loving the podcast. In a couple of podcasts, I'm definitely now subscribed and listening. So yeah, all good.
Cool.
Brilliant.
Wonderful. Well, we recently had Salesforce MVP Sharif.
I know.
On,
it was a great episode too. Definitely go. Yeah. Crossing over. Yeah. More insight into Salesforce and stuff like that and crossovers. Yeah. It was really good. But yeah, well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed yourself. And hopefully see you guys very soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Francis.
Thanks, Francis.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Now, please, 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 if you like or what you see or hear, then please rate this podcast in your podcast player, as it tells me that there are people out there that actually are listening to this and that it's useful to them. Also, it helps the podcast algorithms to kind of elevate the podcast in the different podcast directories, which will be really helpful for me as well. And finally, if you do have a question that you want to ask on the podcast, then head to salesforceposse.com/message and maybe you'll appear in the next podcast. But apart from that, thanks for listening, and until next time, ta-ta.